Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Details at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the October 18 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the USDA NASS reports for the month of October with Joe Persaki. He's the director of the Statistics Division at USDA NASS. On the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural markets, Chip Nellinger at Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and from Atchison, Kansas at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, Mike Zuzulo.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. If you have not given yet and pledged your financial support, still time, do that now at 217-244-9455, especially if you listen online, dial in, or just hit the little red button at the top of the page that says contribute now at willag.org. That's willag.org. We like the $120 level, but any amount works. Contribute now in support of agricultural programming from Illinois Public Media.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, let's begin our discussion, gentlemen, with this question. Chip Nellinger, when you look at what's been happening at the marketplace in the last week and think about what USDA's crop progress report might show on Monday, how far along will we be in both corn and soybean harvest?
Well, I think that's kind of the $64,000 question here, among others. I think on beans, we're getting quite a ways along here. We've had a couple little weather delays, but I would not be surprised if we're not up past the two-thirds mark in beans. Corn seems like it's a slower go here. Guys have been kind of hit and miss on corn. It's been tough to dry down, so I wouldn't be surprised if we're not still under a third, maybe even upper 20s on this corn. It's been a slow road, but a little bit of a moving target there last 2 weeks without any information. It's going to be nice to get some information flowing here again over the coming weeks.
Mike Zuzulo, do you have a different opinion about how far along we might be in corn harvest?
No, I think Chip nailed it, especially out here west of the Mississippi. It seems like that the folks out here did what the people in Illinois and Indiana and Ohio did. They really went after the beans a lot harder and are turning back to the corn. I think moisture levels are a big reason, Todd, that this is going on in both sides of the corn belt, as well as the fact that those early premiums, those early free DPs, those early incentives essentially to try and get as much corn early as possible, they seem to have dried up. And I don't know whether that's because we filled the pipeline or whether elevators knew that we were probably going to see a lot more beans being cut anyway.
And Kurt Kimmel, do you suppose producers are taking the corn to town, or are they putting it in their bins, or are they just locking it up in general?
It's just about all of the above. Each one's a little bit different. We're seeing guys that got out early take advantage, just moved into the pipeline with a little wider basis in some areas. Guys are wanting to try to store it and look for some up movement here, especially in basis appreciation as we move into this mid-December. So, but what we're seeing, though, is a good active harvest progress here in the central Midwest, but there's some areas in the upper Midwest that's been hampered, got the crop in late, and just hasn't been drying down as fast as they want it to. So we're going to go to how fast we get done or where we're at, to what crops are going to come out late.
Hey, Chip, when we get to the November 8th, that's a Friday, for the crop production report, which number will you be looking most forward to out of the crop production report and out of the WASDE figures?
Well, most important in my mind is going to be any acreage revisions. I think that's really where the corn market boils down to is we know that those FSA numbers indicate a fair amount, a pretty large amount of prevent plant acres. The whole crux of the corn market, in my mind, comes down to what they do with the acreage revision. So that's what I'm most looking forward to. Yields, I think it's a pretty safe assumption that maybe up a tick both on corn and beans. But I think the yield or the acreage issue is the biggest thing going right now.
Mike, how about you?
I think so, too. And I think one thing I'd add is that I think the 13 bean carryover is something big, not just for the old crop beans in the cash market, Todd, but I think it's a big issue with the acreage play in 14. I'm kind of like Informa's numbers on my 14 estimates, where I see bigger soft red wheat acres, bigger hard red wheat acres, bigger bean acres at this point in time at the expense of corn. And so the bigger the bean ending stocks for 13 becomes, I think the more pressure there will be on the back end beans, and that maybe takes away from the upside potential in the new crop corn. And so I think beans really play a big role here, especially with this issue with the ethanol mandate still circulating, that the corn's going to probably have to work off the wheat and work off the beans in 2014, to especially in acreage, to get the upper limits that I hope it can get to.
Kurt, Mike mentioned the ethanol mandate and the fact that US EPA, and they say they really have been considering changing the RFS, or the amount of advanced fuels and ethanol fuel that might be mixed into the gasoline supply of the United States. How much of an impact at this point has that had? How worried are you about it?
Well, you know, that's going to be debated for quite some time. The thing is, on ethanol, though, the overall gasoline demand's been declining somewhat, but it's going to be there. We're comfortable with the 4.8 to 5 billion bushel mark on the ethanol number on the supply-demand balance sheet.
I'd like to poll all of you, and we'll start with you, Kurt, about what producers should be doing with both new and old crop corn at this point. Is there reason to make sales in both?
Well, at this point, if you're putting in storage, I think it's Texas hedge time. I think you double down here. In other words, we're in a position now where if something does happen, the movement is to the upside. Most producers want to store it and look for 50 cents up here between now and sometime this winter. Well, if that's the case, if you put on a Texas hedge for, say, your cutting your up movement in half, for example, if you're looking for 50 cents up, you rebalance and have a long position on the board too, you only need 25 cents up. So the expectations to the upside become kind of obtainable here if you use some money management here and use a managed double long position here to recoup something to the upside and get caught up on sales going into December, Todd.
Mike Zuzulo?
I think we're still in a mindset here, Todd, that the feed grain sector, the wheat and the corn sector, is still better property in the cash market as opposed to being short on the cash. I'd rather be holding in the bin on the corn and have paper positions in place. I think the Gulf basis this past week and the demand that we've seen over the past 2 weeks would help secure that type of position. I think the beans are a lot harder because South American planting progress would suggest that between Argentine corn acres shifting to beans and a very good planting pace in Brazil for beans, that you will have an ample bean supply, at least a chance for it going into the winter months. So I'm more eager to get 13 beans hedged on rallies, especially if we can get back to 13.25, 13.50 area. And I'm really eager to get started on the 14 beans as well.
And how about 14 corn?
I'm a little bit reluctant on 14 corn because I think that you've got an issue where producers are looking at their cash flow and they're looking at their bean yields and they're looking at the crop insurance, and I think you're probably more secure on a lower number for corn. I mean, Informa came out with 91.7 million acres for next year's corn versus this year's 96. I think that's pretty close, and so that's a pretty big, steep drop, and that really makes you have to have a very strong yield in 2014 for corn.
And Chip, your view of corn for this year and next?
Well, I think on this year, we've been in a situation the last two or three years where we haven't had carry in the corn market. We've got carry now. The most important part that producers need to understand about that, though, is if you don't sell that deferred time slot and lock that carry in, oftentimes when time clicks off the calendar, you lose the whole carry. In other words, once the December futures go off the board, the March just seems to kind of go sideways to lower to grind down to where the December went off the board. And if you don't sell those bounces and lock carry in, you lose it. And that kind of defeats the purpose of on-farm storage. So we're of the camp that on small bounces, 15 to 30 cents, short covering bounces ahead of the November crop report or just after it, if we get a bullish uptick because of a cut in acres, we have to be looking at deferred the March, the May, the July futures to sell that and lock the carry in. Kind of agree with what Mike said. You know, I think we're backing into a little bit of an acreage battle here based off of, you know, cash flows. However, it does look like fertilizer and nitrogen have come down a tick. I still think bounces back up two and just shy of $5 on December 14 futures. You need to take a look at, again, I agree with Mike that the real wild card here, I think we got to take a close look at those November 14 beans. Any bounces, 11.85, 11.90, you know, 15 to 20 cent bounces from here, I think we have to be protecting that on the assumption that our yields here are a little bit better than expected, and South America is set to produce a huge amount of beans if their weather cooperates for them over the next 3 months.
And, Kurt, you may as well come back with your bean ideas as well.
Yeah, that's a big fear, as Chip mentioned there, Southern Hemisphere on beans. Most premiums up front, we'd like moving the beans and, if need be, replace ownership on the back end in case South America does not come through this winter. So I think the seller of the beans and store the corn.
What do you suppose we will find out about Chinese imports of U.S. corn, if anything, as the USDA begins to ramp up its numbers on the exports, Mike?
I think JCI China, who came out with the idea that we sold as much as 10 cargoes or 1.2 million tons to China the past couple weeks, they usually are pretty spot on, Todd, and I think USDA is going to confirm what the JCI people think happened. I think that makes sense from a standpoint of the domestic price of corn and their crush margins for meal and just their basic problem with needing to fight inflation again. And we saw that in Friday's GDP figures. How did they get back to almost 8% growth in the third quarter in that country? And it was really the same thing that we do here in the United States. It's cheap money and it's pushing the infrastructure. And that's inflationary. And the food really shows that up in China. So I think their domestic market is needing imports, especially of the feed grains. I'm still of the view that you did not have as good a wheat crop in China as the trade and maybe USDA is expecting right now.
Do you suppose they've been in buying soybeans as well?
I do. I think they have been, and I think this is where Friday's numbers, you know, we confirm that with fresh sales of 220,000 tons and then another 140-some of unknown destinations. It sounds like they're stopping their state reserve selling, and they're going to try and start buying on the domestic market with their acreage last year so low. I think they're going to have to supplement that with imports.
Across the Corn Belt, guys, farmers will be preparing themselves to sow after they get corn harvested. A soft red winter wheat, hard red winter wheat in some of the western areas. Should they be considering extra acres this time? At this time, especially if they can double crop with soybeans, Chip?
Well, I think it does make sense, especially in those that southern tier, southern Illinois, southern Indiana, Kentucky. Those producers are kind of in the driver's seat right now because they have a lot more flexibility. So absolutely, cash flows in that area of the country say, hey, wheat and double crop beans, especially after the performance that they've seen the last 2 years, really pencils. So I do think you could see maybe an uptick in wheat planted acreage, assuming that the weather gives us a little bit of a window, which it looks like it's going to over the next 10 days, 2 weeks. We might see an increase in wheat acreage, double crop beans, and for those southern Corn Belt producers, it definitely makes sense.
And what should producers be asking their landlords this year that they haven't asked in the past? Mike?
I had two calls on that this week, as a matter of fact, Todd, so I think you've got your pulse on the market right now very well. I think, number one, you really work hard in trying to get into a flexible cash rent where you both share profits, and you, as a renter, you don't tie yourself down into poor crop prices in case those markets don't come back, or and we do go into another recession like Kurt was talking about, the outside markets turn the tables on us when we're just now starting to see some daylight. I think the other thing that Illinois and Indiana and Nebraska, Iowa, major Kansas, major South Dakota, major Corn Belt producers already do, that's a nice idea, is to add tiling, cost share when it comes to doing that kind of thing. Come up with ways that both parties take advantage of higher prices and one party doesn't get stuck holding the bag if prices go lower.
Chip, anything from you to add?
Farmers in general, as I talk to elevator managers, have the least amount of corn sold that they ever have. And now it appears that the yields are pretty good, if not record in some areas. So that's my biggest fear, is we're going to have this huge overhang of corn supply hanging over us for quite some time. And if you combine that with some of these financial problems we're having, or Washington causes another government shutdown, that could be disastrous. So that's my biggest fear. And so I agree with what Mike said. You know, these high dollar cash rents could look pretty disadvantageous here in 12 months. So it's time to kind of be visiting that with landowners, I feel.
You're listening to the October 18 edition of Commodity Week. Our panelists include Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities, and Mike Zuzula of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. When we come back, we'll talk with Joe Persaki from USDA NASS.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. The first half of October can be described as very warm, with temperatures running almost 5 degrees above average. Precipitation ranged from 2 inches along I-70 and increased southward up to 4 inches. North of I-70 was considerably drier, with most areas getting closer to an inch of rain or less. Crops in central and northern Illinois benefited from the warmer, drier conditions that aided crop maturity, dry down, and field conditions. According to the National Weather Service forecast, we can say goodbye to the warm weather and start talking about frost. Daytime highs on Saturday will be in the low 50s across the northern half of Illinois and in the mid to upper 50s in the southern half. There is a chance of rain in eastern and northern Illinois on Saturday. Sunday's lows will range from 31 degrees in that far northwest corner and in the low to mid 30s in the rest of northern Illinois, and in the upper 30s and low 40s in the southern half of the state. Highs on Sunday will be in the mid-50s in the north and the low 60s in the south. Monday's lows will be a little warmer in the low to mid-40s throughout the state. However, morning lows on Tuesday through Thursday will range from the low 30s in northern Illinois to the mid-30s elsewhere. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the October 18 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Well, the government shutdown has ended, and Joe Persaki, the NASS director of the Statistics Division for Crops, is back to work and in Washington, D.C. He's on the phone line with us to take up what reports we may see in the very near future and what reports definitely will not come out. Joe, thank you for being with us on this Friday. We do appreciate that. First, let's go through the reports that won't come out, which ones will we not see?
Right. So based on, you know, what we looked at coming out of the, you know, the government shutdown, the October 11th crop production report, that's, you know, it won't exist. It will not be put out. And then tied with that, our friends down at the World Agriculture Outlook Board will not be putting out a WASDA report. And then the there's two crop progress reports, the one for the 7th of October and then the 15th, and those are not, you know, not going to exist. They will not be there.
The crop progress report on Monday will exist?
On the 21st, we were able to get instructions to our regional offices late yesterday afternoon so they can get all the systems set up, you know, and so they get the notification to their reporters out there so that we plan to have a crop progress report on the 21st. And I think that's a good thing because, you know, the harvest is going pretty quickly in some areas, so we can get a kind of handle on what's going on with that because we haven't seen that for a while. So
tell me about the data, Joe, that was or was not collected for the crop production. And I'm relatively speaking, I know you can't speak for the World Agriculture Outlook Board, but for the WASDE figures, supply demand in October. At one point, we rather thought maybe USDA, NASS might be able to compile those after the fact. Simply not enough data there?
Yeah, so there's a couple things to consider. When we work on the, specifically for this one, for the October crop production report, you know, we have two surveys that go into that. One is the what we call the Ag Yield, which is a farmer survey, and the other is our Objective Yield survey where we go out to the field. Okay, one of the when we looked at, you know, can we or can we not do, you know, the October report, was that our data collection period for the farmer survey started September 27th. And so we had basically, you know, Friday night calling Saturday and phoning on Monday. And the data collection period was supposed to run through October 4th. Well, we were only able to, we had less than half of our sample that we even attempted to contact somebody. So, I mean, we have had a sample of like almost 13,000, and we had just a little over 5,000 individuals that we had attempted to contact. So there wasn't, less than half of the data was even possibly available. And then on objective yield, the data collection was wrapping up on objective yield. However, many of the lab samples that the enumerator sent in from the field, those were probably, date-wise, they looked like they were sent starting like the 27th, the last ones were the 27th or 28th that were sent to our lab in St. Louis. Well, when we shut down on the 30th, those samples kept coming in from the field with material, corn and soybean and cotton, and they have been sitting since the 1st, and we got a big shipment of data of these samples in yesterday. There was like 1,100 samples that came in. Now, fairly high moisture corn, if it's in the dent stage, they've been sitting in plastic bags for 2 weeks, so it's all about the viability of the sample, and that's what the issue was, and it's trying to get through that, and it just doesn't look like there's much material that's salvageable, and that's what they're working on right now, and that's what led us to this. And plus two, it's going to take them probably through next week, not quite, but to process the data whatever they can. So we're starting to push into then, late October, and then we're starting to do data collection for the November report. So things were starting to bang up against each other there.
Yeah, so will you be able to use any of the October data collected to help define the November report?
Yeah, that's the main goal of what we're doing with our folks in St. Louis, is going through that material. And then to say, okay, what samples can be salvaged that we can use, because the information can help us in November. One of the bigger concerns that we have moving forward is that the enumerators, they'll do what we call the last visit to the plots, and those are just before the farmers will harvest their crop, and they will take all the beans in the sample, whatever, in the little 3-foot section, and corn ears from a small section, and send those to the lab. Well, our fear is that, with the shutdown starting with the 1st of October, there was quite a bit of corn and soybeans harvested through, through your listing area, through the Illinois, through the, Indiana, you know, area, Ohio, being harvested, Missouri being harvested, so our numerators will not be able out there to get those samples. So that's the concern for November a little bit.
Your fear is you won't have an objective sample?
Yeah, we want to make sure what we get is representative, because I'm concerned, you know, there's always concern, well, okay, did you lose all the southern samples in Illinois? You know, will it give you a biased upward yield? Or did you lose, you know, like the western half of Ohio? You know what I'm saying? I mean, so we have to look and see what we have and what we don't have. So it's kind of an interesting exercise to go through to see what you have, and then you can see what, you know, what's going to play out of it. So we're going to be kind of busy over the next, you know, 2 or 3 weeks as we move into November then.
What will you do, or can you do, with the FSA numbers?
Okay, the FSA numbers, what we're planning to do is we will, in the November report, we will publish the, you know, any updated acreage or whatever based on FSA data that we normally do in October. And it will be the FSA data, the most recent that we have. That's what we'll use. Because the FSA data, we'll start getting pulls back next week from the FSA, and so we'll take, you know, the, like, that latest pull that we get probably on November 4th use that in our review as we move into that November report.
So if you adjust acreage, it should be a really good, solid adjustment then.
Right. It should be. It should be, right, if there was any sort of delay with, you know, reporting due to the, you know, the delayed sign-up period this year. So hopefully, we'll see when we get into that.
Finally, will you be in Chicago Monday?
The USDA Data Users Meeting is on. And we're you know, working through several items right now today to get things lined up. But USDA NAS and the World Board will be in Chicago. We're fairly confident our friends from Foreign Ag Service, AMS, ERS, and the Census Bureau will be there as well. So we, you know, at least NAS and the World Board are committed to be there on Monday afternoon. So.
Good luck, Joe, and on behalf of the industry, we're really glad you're back to work. Thank you.
Well, I'm just glad everybody missed us. I just always thank all the farmers and ranchers out there that do take the time to fill out our reports, because they're the lifeblood of this information stream, because it all starts with them.
Thanks much.
Thanks a lot, Todd.
Joe Persaki is the director of the Statistics Division at the United States Department of Agriculture's National Agricultural Statistics Service. That's USDA NAS. Located in Washington, D.C. Now let's get a final word from our panelist, Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois.
Still a lot of market in front of us here. There's a lot of creative ideas to help manage some money, so encourage everybody to sort of sit down and push the pencil a little bit once they get the harvest wrapped up.
Mike Zuzalo?
Well, now that we've gotten the aftermath of the debt ceiling behind us, Todd, I think it's real important now we don't miss a major low in the corn market, or, as Chip said, a major retracement in the corn market as we head into or just after the November crop report. One of the biggest issues that we're probably going to face next week is if these models on the weather turn cooler and wetter and it slows down our corn harvest, that's going to be tough for the funds and the investment people to have to manage, because they're going to have a lot less certainty of when we're done in the fields and what the final supply is going to be.
And Chip Nellinger.
Well, I think it's important to, even though we're busy in the middle of harvest right now, take a look at the way this corn market's structured and the cash bids and basis, and begin to make plans to lock the carry in the market via sales on bounces from here, and small bounces. Also, I don't think it's too early to be looking and running some cash flows for that 14 crop, kind of playing what's it look like from a planning perspective on any acreage shifts. Inputs have come down some, and small bounces still could be profitable right at or just above $5 for those December 14 corn futures, and up near $12 for next year beans.
Our thanks to Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, along with Mike Zuzalo from Global Commodity Analytics Consulting, for being with us for this October 18 edition of Commodity Week. And to you, too, if you've already pledged your financial support to Illinois Public Media, this program, Commodity Week. If you have not, it's not too late. You can always dial in at 217-244-9455 or just pledge online. Go to willag.org and contribute now. I'm Todd Gleason.